WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are definitely doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Next August, I'm doing the Maryland Peach Cake Tour. My wife has learned how to make some peach cakes. We got some peach cake around here. But crab cakes, beer, doing it better than anybody all month long, celebrating 31 years. Almost now half of my 31 years have been spent with this guy. Luke, I bet you don't know that August 3rd is a really special day here at WNST AM 1570 for a lot of reasons. First, it's my cat Nala's fifth birthday today, August 3rd. Nala's the most beautiful creature ever, so we love her. Today would have been my maternal mother's 73rd birthday. I lost my mom about 6-7 years ago, so she would have been 73 today. And today, WNST turns 24 years old. It was 24 years ago this morning, August 3rd, 1998. I don't know what you were Lower Susquehannock High School or something at that point, right? Correct?
I was a sophomore in high school getting ready for the start of football camp. So yeah, playing high school football and getting beaten up by all the seniors. How about that?
Little Luke, if I would have said you're going to spend your days sweating out in Owings Mills at training camp in the summer of 2022 and covering the trading deadline of the beloved Trey Mancini. And so we're 24 years into this thing. August 3rd is a special day, Rand. I just want to point that out to you, that you've been here for more than half of it. So way more than half of it, really, for the radio station. So welcome back to training camp. Welcome to a trading deadline where the Orioles could have been buyers, could have been sellers, could have been stand patters, but instead, you know, they continued on what probably would have checked the box the day they hired Mike Elias, which is he's got no soul. He doesn't care about the community or the fans or this or that. All he really wants to do is win. Even if they cheat, that's cool too. But like dealing Trey Mancini, I have rarely seen this sort of emotion in regard to a player and what they get back for him. It's a little bit of a sticky week for the Orioles, who've sort of made nice with a lot of their fans by winning, but sort of, you know, a lot of fans didn't understand this. And I understand that you go down both sides of it. They're building an organization, but there is a part of this where you do want to like the players and like the team. And it's been a long time since a lot of people have liked a lot of the players and a lot of the team.
Yeah, and that's tough. And you don't want to diminish the human element of this, especially in a case like Trey Mancini, who we know everything he's been through off the field. This guy lost a ton of games. I mean, remember, he arrived on the scene for that cup of coffee. He was actually on the wild card game roster in 2016, but you know, he was just arriving as a rookie at that point. So he was here for the very end of what had been the most fruitful era of Orioles baseball in quite some time, and he suffered a lot of losing. And of course, you know, there's no diminishing what he went through off the field with his cancer diagnosis. And he talked about saying goodbye to Brian Ebel and the training staff and the Orioles doctors, who were very proactive in seeing that, you know, some of his routine blood work that all players have at the beginning of spring training was off. And they recommended, hey, you need to get checked out. You know, some things seem a little off here, because he didn't have the symptoms that someone with colon cancer at his advanced stage would have. So there's so much of that.
In our, you know, in my world, when my wife got sick, and it was literally one doctor, one intern that saw a blood thing. We'll never forget that man. You know, he's over in Egypt now. He was Egyptian. We're in touch with him. He helped save her life. You know what I mean? So that first detection, you know, and I've known Brian Ebel forever. I love Brian. And of all the people, I've been thrown out 16 years. If Brian sees me somewhere, it's always warm with him. And that's the way medical people and doctors are. And that relationship, I mean, we talk about the Ed Block Courage Awards, right? Ed Block was a trainer. That relationship between players always incredibly strong, but I can't imagine with Trey and what he's gone through. And I don't know him. You stood next to him 1,000 times over the last decade. I mean, his legend, of all the things I feel like I miss out by not being there, and about to have some other issues as well, but not knowing really quality people. I feel cheated for not having experienced 20 minutes with Trey Mancini on my show, because I think he's a special guy.
He is a special guy. And I think I mentioned this to you a couple of weeks ago, and we'll get to the baseball part of this, because I actually, what they got for him, I like. You know, this wasn't that they just threw him away for an Andrew Kashner return of a few years ago when they got a couple 17-year-old international prospects, you know, if you want to even call them prospects. They got some a couple real talents, but I can think back to this was right before the All-Star break when the Orioles were in the midst of that winning streak when the ball was really starting to roll for this team. They're getting closer and closer to 500 at that point. You know, we know they ultimately ended up having a 10-game winning streak, but it was in the clubhouse and a few of us reporters were not even interviewing Trey. It was just a minute or two. I think we were waiting for Jorge Lopez. It may have been the day that he was announced going to be announced as the Orioles All-Star. And we had kind of gotten an interview and, you know, they just embargoed it for a couple hours until it was announced. But Trey just kind of, he had this just look of satisfaction on his face that it's fun being here finally. And, you know, we've been through a lot. I've been through a lot. He knew the trade deadline was coming up. And I think from a business standpoint, I think Trey was even looking at it very pragmatically and saying, hey, Mountcastle's the first baseman here. They're going to want DH to be flexible for Adley Rutschman, who, by the way, is already this team's best player at this point. I'm not at all shying away from saying that. But Trey could see, he could see the writing on the wall. And this fan base, this city, this organization should know better than anyone that investing in first base types on the wrong side of 30, not a wise proposition typically. And that's not to say the Orioles were ever going to give him a Chris Davis.
I did see that Chris Davis's glove is still a part of Chris Davis's glove is on Mountcastle at first base. Did you see that the clip of that?
I did.
So Chris Davis is still here.
Yeah.
There's your reminder right there.
There's your parting gift for a $161 million contract. Long story short, Trey, he kind of knew where the future was and it wasn't going to be here for him. And I don't think this was a case where, other than just what we just kind of laid out there, some of the medical side, the sentimental side, the fact that this team drafted him, I think a part of him was also ready to move on himself. He would never, wasn't a malcontent about it, wasn't, you know, it wasn't cussing the Orioles under his breath, anything like that. But I think there was a sense of an understanding there. But at the same time, you know, even if a quote breakup is mutual, you know, there's always going to be some sentimental feelings and some feelings of what could have been. And, you know, I think back to, you mentioned Chris Davis. You know, imagine if the Orioles had had the forward thinking at the time, the previous regime, and what they had with Trey Mancini, it would have been that much easier to let Chris Davis go. And maybe you wouldn't have been in quite the same kind of mess as they've been over the last 5-6 years. But again, that's water under the bridge. He just had that sense of accomplishment that the Orioles were back on track, moving in the right direction. I think he knew he wasn't going to be a part of that. But just seeing him these last few weeks and some of the moments, I mean, you know, we mentioned the inside the park home run on Mo Gabba Day. And, you know, he had the walk-off a few weeks back, walk-off hit against, the Angels, I guess it was. So
he got to take his bows.
He did, and he's going to come back later this season. The Astros are going to come into town, and he's going to get a chance to get his flowers then. So as much as the human element of this does hurt, and I completely understand fans being upset, even though we've been talking about this. We've talked about
trade. Baseball fan 53 years, right? Yeah. Like, just lucky that Palmer and Brooks never wound, and Cal right. never wound up anywhere else. But everybody else did.
Frank Robinson was traded in the midst of the Orioles' glory years, mind you. Eddie Murray was traded. Now, you know, that one didn't exactly work out. But the point is,
Little Louie was my favorite shortstop ever. I'm like, yeah, and then Belanger came. And then, you know, like, that's the way this works. Those who loved Adam Jones or loved J.J. Hardy or loved whomever, Brady Anderson, they can fall in love with D.L. Hall. You know what I mean? There's going to be another one, right?
There will be. Not that Trey will ever be forgotten, but if we're going to focus on the human element, I've been saying this all year, you know, probably even going back to last year to some extent. Let's look at it on the flip side. This guy's lost so much on the field. He's dealt with so much off the field. He's 30 years old. You know, he hasn't hit free agency yet. He's made money, but he hasn't made insane money and probably won't in the context of other free agents out on the market. He'll get a deal and he'll probably get a nice deal. But now he has a chance to go to one of the best teams in baseball, play for a guy like Dusty Baker, you know, who's regarded as one of the classiest, most respected, highly regarded men in baseball. And he's going to have a heck of a chance to, one, play. He's going to play in the postseason, which may, even if the Orioles continue this thing going, you know, they're still less likely to make it than to make it. So he's going to have a chance to play every day or most every day in Houston for a team that's running away with the AL West, a team that's jockeying with the Yankees for the best record in the American League.
He literally got traded into October. Literally.
Yeah, he's going to have a great chance to win a World Series. And if he performs on that stage, will elevate his free agent profile that much more for him. So as much as it's very easy to think about this through the Orioles lens, through the fan perspective, and I totally understand that. And I don't want to make light of that whatsoever. Think about this through the lens of what kind of opportunity Trey Mancini's going to have now, which to me, you know, I know there's so many, you know, so much disdain for the Astros and everything that happened, you know, with the scandal and trash cans and all that. But I don't know, Trey Mancini playing for the Astros, going up against the Yankees in a hypothetical ALCS. I know who I'm rooting for there. So, I mean, that's kind of where it is. But to now shift towards looking at this from a baseball perspective, first of all, let's also understand, to your point, Trey Mancini, as much as he's beloved and respected here, this isn't Cal Ripken. This isn't Juan Soto being dealt in DC. This is a guy who, you know, in terms of wins above replacement and looking at numbers of that nature, it was fourth, fifth, sixth, somewhere in that as far as their positional players go. You know, Trey wasn't having a tremendous season. You know, you look at the numbers and you're talking about someone who has been solid, but very, very much unspectacular. So again, that's where I kept coming back to, don't deal this guy just for the sake of doing it. And that's where I do look at what they were able to get in the process of turning this into a three-team trade with Houston and Tampa Bay. The Orioles bring in Seth Johnson, who MLB, their pipeline website where they look at prospects, now has him sitting at number 8 overall in their system, third best pitcher. Now, one reason he was available is he is having Tommy John surgery, so not a guy that's going to be exactly helping you in an imminent fashion, but highly regarded. Chase McDermott, the other arm, number 12 in their system, according to MLB Pipeline. So this isn't a case where they just brought in a couple, some organizational filler. We'll get to the Jorge Lopez deal in a moment, because I'm not as high on that deal as I was on the return for this. So if you were going to move Trey Mancini, all along I said, I want it to be something that looks like it makes sense in terms of guys that have a real practical chance of helping this team in a couple years. Because again, I've said all along, as exciting as it is to watch this team, as much as I think they're on the right track, I'm still and haven't been looking at this from a 2022 perspective. For me, it really begins next year and beyond. And the reality is the Orioles weren't going to re-sign Trey Mancini. I know Mike Elias offered, you know, some semblance of hope for that maybe they'd bring Mancini back in free agency. I'm not buying that. I'm just not. And we've heard plenty of GMs talk in those terms. How many times has Ozzie Newsome or Eric DaCosta talked about leaving the door open? And occasionally a guy comes back, but more often than not,
just aren't at bats here for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's just where they are. If this is all working and their system's legit and the guys that are coming are going to mostly pan out, and that's the objective and goal, right? Then there won't be as much room for a 30-plus first baseman/DH who wants to play every day. And that's fine. And Trey, I respect that. So
Luke,
that's
the
where
other part of this is it saved the organization a couple million bucks. And I've been here a long time, and yeah, anything that puts millions of dollars back into the Orioles' pockets at no loss to them, that was the way the old man operated always, to some degree. This would say to me that $2.5 million, don't urinate on that either. And don't bet that, to me, that could be the lead. Don't bury the lead that they're like, well, that's $2.5 million that we'll have to give Rutschman 6 years from now. $2.5 million is $2.5 million if you don't need to have that baseball player, especially if you have other players to come in and take those at bats in a year when you've given up. And I would say given up. They now have said, we're not making the playoffs. We're probably not making the playoffs. That this is a training exercise for next year, even though it's a good one. It's like a preseason where John Harbaugh goes undefeated. You know what I mean? That is what this is. And that money, don't discount the money. I mean, I've been doing this too long to say, well, it's only $2.5 million. It's $2.5 million. It buys a lot of lawyers at $400 an hour for John and Lou too. You know, money matters to them. It really does. Way more so than maybe well, they're just rich kids or whatever. I think that money matters to the organization because it's not easy for $2.5 million. You know how many sponsors they have to sell to get, you know how many Southwest Airlines sponsorships they have to sell to get to it? How many tickets at $20 a throw they have to sell to make $2.5 million? It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. So there's that too. And yeah. I just want to point that out 20 minutes into this, that I think that that's a bigger part of it than 20 minutes into this, in my opinion.
I don't know if I'd say it was the main motivation by any stretch of the imagination, because if that were the case, then they easily could have traded off Anthony Santander and some other guys and saved even more money, right? So they did get a good return. I will point out in countering that, and this is actually a nice transition into the Jorge Lopez deal, as much as I looked at that return and I looked at those names that they got, I'm underwhelmed for a guy who's been an all-star closer and also has two more years of club control. They did send cash and, you know, they did send Jorge Lopez and cash to the Twins to improve that return. So again, you know, how
they
much
must
cash
not believe in him with 2 years of control.
Right, right. Well,
if you saw 60 to 80 innings out of him next year and the following year, that wouldn't be these innings, but good innings, good innings. Yeah. And if they like the kid and apparently he's a really good person, like I don't know anything about him at all other than, you know, his child and, you know, his character in that way of taking care of his family. I'm a little shocked by that. You know that is a little, that it smells to me like they think something about him that they don't. Why don't they want him on their team next year? That would be my question.
Well, right, and that's where I look at this. And look, we mentioned Jorge Lopez on many occasions as we've broken down and the trade deadline and speculated and pondered and opined about it. So it's not that they traded him. It's when I look at this return. And to be very clear, wasn't expecting an Andrew Miller, Aroldis Chapman type return like we saw several years back. You're generally not seeing any returns remotely like that for relievers anymore.
Because they were bad deals.
Well, they were bad deals for the teams that gave up the prospects. And you're seeing, and the Orioles are a great example of this. If you know what you're doing in terms of some of your player development and tweaking and making adjustments, I mean, Jorge Lopez was a waiver claim a couple years ago. So, but that said, I do look at this deal and, okay, they seem to really like Cade Povich, who, was drafted a year ago and I mean, a guy who I think he was number 22 in the Twins system, according to MLB Pipeline, but seems like he'll probably rise a little bit in that regard. But, you know, you look at the other names, Cano is kind of a guy that, you know, maybe the Orioles think he's the Twins version of Felix Bautista and they'll get him and make an adjustment. And suddenly he kind of fits right in because he's 28. I mean, he's kind of the one guy that's appeared in the majors. The other two guys are, you know, lower level, you know, kind of used to be the Gulf Coast League, but now, you know, it's the FCL. Two guys that are, you know, lottery tickets. Those are the lottery ticket types. So I look at that return and I just say, if that's really the best you could do for Jorge Lopez, I would have been more inclined to say, you know, maybe wait it out for the rest of the offseason. Maybe you wait till next year.
When does arbitration kick in for Lopez? When would they have to start really paying him?
They'd be at that point. So,
if he's a $10 million next year, then you got to.
He wouldn't have been $10 million, but he would have gotten a sizable raise. There's no question about that. But that's where I would have said, you know, are you sure you couldn't have done better in the offseason? And, you know, that would have, you wouldn't have been paying them next year then. So that's where I do look at that. And this return, unlike the Mancini return, which I really liked for a 2 month rental, if we're looking at it, stripping away the human element. And again, I'm not making light of that, but just looking at it from a baseball and business standpoint, I like that deal. This deal to me, all right, this is the one where you need to have a little bit of a leap of faith in Elias and their baseball ops that, maybe they really like a couple of these guys more than the rest of the industry does, or the pundits do, let's say, you know, the Baseball America and FanGraphs and MLB Pipeline and all that. So we'll see how that plays out. So, but the deal that really makes me scratch my head, and it's the lowest profile of the three moves they made over these last 2 days leading up to the deadline, is acquiring Brett Phillips from the Rays for cash considerations. Look, Brett Phillips is known as a great clubhouse guy. You know, go Google him. He befriended a young girl battling cancer in the St. Pete, Tampa area. You know, a guy who was loved in that clubhouse. But I mean, to look at the numbers, you know, I think he's batting 150 this year. And he's an outfielder. Now, he's a good defensive outfielder, has some speed. But that's actually the move that makes me shake my head more than anything, because part of the argument of trading Mancini or Anthony Santander, who they ultimately held on to, and we'll see what happens with him in the coming months, was
what? That might have been a value thing. They might have said, Luke won't like what we're going to get back for him.
Sure, sure.
Different position, different knee, different bat, different everything, right?
Right, and we know that their system is loaded with outfield types, so I'm fine with that, but I thought part of the point of trading Mancini or Santander was to get Kyle Stowers to the majors. I mean, Kyle Stowers, who, you know, batting average-wise hasn't been fantastic at Triple-A. He's hitting .263 going into Wednesday, but he's got 23 doubles. He has 3 triples, 17 home runs. You know, he played in Triple-A a little bit last year as well. Like, it's time for... To me, I don't know what else he can prove at Norfolk.
Get him 125 at bats.
Get him up here.
Thinking, yeah.
Yeah. Get him ready for 2023. And also, hey, that's information right there. If he rakes and he looks the part in the way that Adley Rutschman certainly looks the part after his first 3 weeks of struggles at the plate, then it becomes even easier if the right deal comes along to move Anthony Santander in the offseason. Or do you move Austin? You know, it gives you more information. So, you know, the thing that's concerning, and again, maybe Brett Phillips is here for a week and then they move on from him. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that was a move made with the thought that maybe they were trying to make another trade and they wanted to cover their bases. You know, maybe they were planning to move Santander and they just didn't get what they wanted. But the couple elements of this that are still what concern me from a big picture, and you touched on it a little bit, talking about Mancini and, you know, talking about Jorge Lopez with arbitration, is I do want to see more evidence of this team. You know, whether you want to call it flip the switch, turning the dial, whatever it might be, because I think 2023 absolutely should be no questions asked a year where you're really trying to compete. And the problem, however, is if you continue to slow play your prospects, and you know, let's call a spade a spade. They slow played Adley Rutschman. He could have been in the majors last year. The pandemic messed with some things. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt to a degree. But we've talked about that. We talked about them slow playing Ryan Mountcastle.
400 more at bats at the end to have another 90 hits if he's at 2,700 later in his career. They artificially started his clock. And that's not unusual when they'll do the same thing for the kid that they just brought in here who's got the cute hair like mine, the Jackson
Holiday
kid.
Right, right. And lots of teams do that. And even contending teams do those types of things. Let's be clear about that. I'm not saying it's right, but it is not an Orioles exclusive thing. However, when we're talking about this team where Mike Elias is clearly, while he didn't tear down the roster to a dramatic degree, certainly didn't give them a push across the finish line by any stretch. If anything, you know, not if anything, he did hold them back a little bit when you move Mancini and Jorge Lopez. Not that these guys were unbelievably irreplaceable. Felix Bautista's going to be their closer now. And I think he profiles to be a really good closer, but you got to replace what he was doing in the eighth inning for you. And if that's Dylan Tate, then you have to replace what Dylan Tate was doing for you in the seventh inning. So, you know, there's always a trickle down effect. So, you know, some of the arguments I heard about Lopez, he was a former waiver claim. It's like, okay, I get it. He was a found $20 bill in your pocket, but that doesn't mean you trade that $20 bill for other sets of pants, right? If you're talking about it in terms of that, and he's going to get more expensive, and I'll hear that. However, from a big picture standpoint for this organization, Mike Elias has signaled, hey, we're not quite there yet. And I don't disagree with him. I don't think they're quite there yet. Even though
Lopez was something like the A's would do, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough.
Well, he runs the team differently, and now that they're successful, sure. He's not running this thinking Scherzer's going to take $300 million and come in here and be an A. Right. Like, we always say at some point they'll spend money. Maybe at some point they'll spend money on their own players, right? They didn't even do that with Machado, right? So sure. At some point you have to give Soto the money or you have to deal him. Same thing with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson right now. You know, I can move you out to camp and you'll be out there sweating today, but it's the same thing. Like, if you don't like me, somebody else, it might be the Lions and it might be a team I don't even want to go to, but somebody's going to make me whole and pay me what I'm worth. And yeah. I think for the Orioles, to your point, when does the investment
right
in guys that have done their thing, like Lopez, right?
And that's where my concern from a big picture standpoint is not that I don't like the players that they have. You know, they've got lots of talent. They've added, you hope, some more, you know, with the deals they made. I'm not sitting here and saying that trading Trey Mancini, which again, I actually like that deal in terms of if you're going to move them, I like that deal. Lopez, we'll see. You know, that's going to be more, all right, you better develop one or two of these guys, because, you know, hypothetically, you might have just traded 2 years of a really productive, valuable back end bullpen piece. But I do have concern that I want to see them eventually break this cycle of, one, slow playing their prospects, which, you know, now with, you know, you bring in Brett Phillips, it's like, all right, are we really not going to call up Kyle Stowers? And I get it, Yusniel Diaz is there right now, but Yusniel Diaz didn't even deserve a promotion. So I get it. He's on the 40-man roster. You know, maybe we'll see him play a little bit and maybe he'll show something.
That's telling, isn't it? He's been here 4 years and has never done anything to get promoted, and they still promoted him. They're still going to bring him up here and let him hit 208 and, you know what I mean, or whatever it's going to be, right?
Yeah. And again, maybe that was a placeholder stance. Keep in mind, you probably don't want to be tinkering with your 40-man roster until after the trade deadline. So that's why, even if Stowers, by the time someone's listening to this, maybe Stowers has been summoned to the Orioles. But, I think that could justify that for the short term. But slow playing your prospects and then trading away guys as they get into arbitration. And look, that is, I'm not saying you should just automatically pay everyone in arbitration. There's got to be, you know, in the same way that the Ravens have moved on from guys entering the final year of their rookie contract, you're trying to get value back because you say, I'm not going to invest a long-term contract in that guy. So that's fine.
Orlando Brown.
Exactly.
The Ravens.
Marquise Brown, right.
Exactly. Thank you. Sure. All the Browns.
Exactly. So that's fine. But where I have a little bit of trepidation still, and again, this comes back to ownership way more than Mike Elias, is if you're constantly churning your arbitration eligible guys and trading them, and while at the same time you're slow playing some of your prospects, what concerns me is that it's really easy to fall into a trap then where you feel like you're constantly 1 year away. And that's, you know, as I've said all along, where they are right now is not the end game. It's not the culmination of this process. It's not the end result. It's the beginning. However, Jorge Lopez, I was fine with the idea of moving him. I don't feel like they got a great return, but who knows? You know, one of these guys that we're talking about, you know, it might end up being an all-star closer for them one day. And I'll be wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times. I'll be wrong again. So, but it wasn't a return that I was so enamored with where I said, yeah, you have to do that. And that's where I look at this thing through the lens of, okay, does that mean that they're not going to be quite as aggressive for 2023? You know, are we going to continue to see them slow play Stowers and Gunnar Henderson into next year and Westberg into next year? I mean, that's where I look at this thing and say, at some point, you got to go for it, right? And I don't mean go for it in terms of you start trading all your prospects away, but, you know, start augmenting what you have. Start bringing in outside talent to augment the young core pieces that you have. And I really feel 2023 is that time to do that. But, you know, when you bring in Brett Phillips to, you know, presumably fill a roster spot in your outfield instead of calling up Kyle Stowers, and, you know, you trade away Jorge Lopez with 2 years left of team control, and, you know, feels like an okay trade return, but nothing all that special. And certainly, even if it's good, it's for a very much a long-term impact and not a 2023 effect. You know, that's where I do look at this thing. And, you know, I question, if not now, when is that going to happen? You know, it's real easy to keep saying when the time is right. Well, when you do things to keep kicking the can down the road, you never get to that point. So, and that's where people very much have been skeptical of these long-term rebuild tanking type situations like the Orioles find themselves in right now, which other teams have done it. Other teams have done it well. Other teams have done it not so well. And then you have a case where you're the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are constantly promising their fans that they're just a year or two away. And
well, the Brewers have felt that way for 10 years, right? Like a lot of these franchises feel like they're a step away but can't get there.
Well, and I'm actually glad you brought up the Brewers because, hey, I mean, they've been in the playoffs. You know, they've been very successful. They traded Josh Hader. So, you know,
he's from Maryland.
Yeah. But, you know, cost and, you know, he had some struggles this year and everything. They tried to recoup some value. They did some other shuffling with their bullpen. So I will say this, and this is where I want to be completely fair as I'm questioning the trade return that they got for Lopez. If there's one area that Mike Elias and his team deserves the benefit of the doubt in terms of churning, it's the bullpen. I mean, I'll remind you, you've probably completely forgotten about this. Just days before this season started, this season where we're talking about a team that's a couple games over 500, positive run differential, still has a shot even after these trades of being the third wild card. They traded Cole Sulcer I'm completely blanking on it. Tanner Scott. Sorry. They traded Cole Sulcer and Tanner Scott literally just a couple days before the season started. And these were two guys that were projected to be back end of the bullpen arms for them. And yet what has been arguably the biggest reason why the Orioles are where they are right now, how terrific their bullpen has been. So if they're going to move Jorge Lopez, and even if the return ends up not panning out all that well, I am confident that they'll find other guys. You know, that's the one area. One area I can almost guarantee you that you're not going to see the Orioles spend money, and I would wholeheartedly agree with this, is bullpen pieces, because they have found they've shown an uncanny ability to turn guys that appeared broken elsewhere into good bullpen arms for them, and then they've flipped them. So maybe they won't flip them quite as dramatically as they're hopefully contending and really making the playoffs and whatnot. But that's one area where, you know, I'm still unsure on the starting pitching, still unsure about, you know, some of the other elements long-term, but they've figured out how to have an effective bullpen. And boy, you keep picking up waiver claims, and whatever the secret sauce is, maybe we're still waiting for it on the starting pitching side a little bit more, but in the bullpen, it's worked. So from that standpoint, let me be clear. Even if I didn't love the Jorge Lopez trade, I don't think this is going to cripple them or really hurt them in a long-term way. I was just hoping, you know, if you're going to trade them, you know, get something a little more, a little shinier in terms of the return. And again, maybe they're one of those guys will be that, and the rest of the industry is a little late in identifying that.
Anything on the Ravens? Ojabo signed. I know you're going to be out there running around. We're still a week out on the actual fake games, but the real practices. And, you know, Lamar's slinging it around, right? I mean, everybody's complimentary, but to your point, you've watched Lamar sling it around for 4 years in August, and this is the way he usually looks in August because he likes practicing. He likes football. He does.
Yeah. I mean, he's looked good. He had a rough day on Monday, but any great quarterback's going to have an occasional off day, but he's looked good. It was good to see Ojabo sign finally. There was a little bit of I think the third year of the deal guaranteed money. There had been a little bit of a disagreement there from what I understand, but they get that done. He's going to go on NFI. I mean, he's not going to be a factor for this team until later in the season.
I was going to say they really expect him to play at Thanksgiving,
I mean,
right?
They do. Yeah, I mean, I think they hope so. I mean, you got to see. I mean, it's an Achilles. And keep in mind, this was a guy as talented as he is. And I love the pick. Let me be clear about that. I really like that pick in the second round, especially. But he was available in the second round, one, because he was injured. But even before the injury, he was regarded as not a project, but green. You know, keep in mind, he barely played at Michigan until last season. I mean, he was a complete, oh my goodness, where'd this guy come from? So he does have something to learn. So it is tough him missing the whole spring, the summer, but at least he's now back in the building. He can be in meetings now. They got the contract taken care of, and we'll see if he's an option for them come October or November, then great. But I don't think, you know, you're certainly not expecting him to be out there anywhere close to week one at this point. So, you know, we'll see him go on NFI. You know, non-football injury because he hurt himself at his pro day, but certainly some optimism that he could help them a little bit later in the year, and a ton of optimism of him and Owe being paired opposite edges starting in 2023. And by the way, as I mentioned him, Adafe Owe has looked very disruptive early in camp, especially when they put the pads on. So good to see that. But by and large, still a relatively uneventful start to training camp, which is music to John Harbaugh's ears. You don't want those injuries like the Broncos had the other day. And you know, the Ravens had more than their share of that last year. They'd like to have at least a little bit of a respite in that regard.
Well, you could be waiting for your owner to have draft picks taken away for being a creep. Yeah. You could be waiting for your quarterback suspension to come in at 6 weeks, which was a disgrace that I'll be talking about into perpetuity. Luke is here. Luke is there. Luke is everywhere. He'll be doing the Pirates and the Orioles all weekend long, celebrating 30 years of Camden Yards. My wife and I are headed west. West Frederick, Hagerstown, Cumberland, Rocky Gap, Oakland, Deep Creek, and some surprises on Tuesday as well next week as the Maryland Crab Cake Tour heads out on the road, all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill, Window Nation. And by the way, Window Nation put my windows in this week, so I'm even happier about that. Keep the bugs out on the lights and all that stuff. Buy two, get two free. It's Window Nation and our friends at the Restaurant Association of Maryland. I got to get them, Restaurant Association of Maryland, to sign up the peach cake. I was too busy talking about the Orioles here to eat all my peach cake, but I'll do that. Cole Roofing, delivering my Royal Farms coffee and Chicken Palooza in the Cole Roofing mug here as well. Luke's going to be out at training camp. Any breaking news happens first on the WNST text service. You get that all courtesy of our friends at Coons Baltimore Ford. Dennis will be here on Thursday driving you home, back on Sunday, back from COVID. We're all doing better. It's August. It's crab cake season. It's baseball time, and it's time to watch some football. We are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.